All right, so who? What are the other two galaxies?
The Sirius Galaxy and the Andromeda Galaxy.
All right, so Andromeda's not far away.
Nope.
And is this when... Oh, hang on a second. Are these galaxies colliding, or just they just happen to be here at this moment? What's the deal?
You got to look at it in a perspective of, let's say, on a map. Instead of a two-dimensional map, you got to see it as a three-dimensional map.
So oh, yeah,
let's say the Milky Way is the x-axis, the Andromeda is the y-axis, and the z-axis is the other one. And mm-hmm. you do it in a method in a manner where only on one side of the map do one little corner of all three of them intersect, and that's where the solar system would be.
Right.
They're not actually interacting, like the very, very edges of their magnetic fields.
Mm-hmm.
And Earth is in the smack dab in the center of that. Perfectly placed there on purpose so it could be a beachhead for all three of the galaxies. That's why Earth is so important, because it is a seed galaxy, seed planet.
Okay, so does that mean that these three galaxies are accelerating away from the point where we are?
I'm saying that Earth in our solar system is a ship that is on a path that keeps it in that little gap. Sometimes it pops out to one side a little bit more, sometimes it pops out to another side a little more, so on and so forth.
So we are dealing with three galactic planes.
Yes.
Yeah, well. Okay. So what you're saying is, like, Sirius belongs to one of these galaxies, and Alcyon belongs to another galaxy, and Andromeda belongs to another group of the galaxies. Is that right?
Yep.
And these galaxies are merging together.
No, they're right? Not merging. They're not really.
They're in a divergent. Trajectory.
They're constantly in attract repulse mode, but they're never going to collide.
All right.
Their central suns are repelling each other. Their just arms are going through that fluxing motion of staying together.
Hmm. Right. So again, this comes to the Hang on a second. All right. So those are three galaxies in the three-dimensional universe. In the five-dimensional universe, are these galaxies existing in one place?
Ah, good question. No, they're existing in many places.
Nowhere left to go. Nowhere left to run. We're sitting around waiting for the evening sun.
Before I wake. my soul to take. With God in heaven, hallowed would be the holy name. The kingdom come, I know your will shall be done.
Is a convergence of sentience also. So
Earth is really like a bunch of doorways.
Yes, it is the doorway to
everyone. Yeah.
With the gene stock for everyone. The greatest prize of all of the universe.
So, who wants my genes?
Exactly. Wants your genes. Not your blue jeans or your acid wash with holes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that sounds like an interesting feature.
The moon is also a great shield for this planet, though it's been destroyed in the various conflicts that were here, and that shield was to protect it from the galactic energies of three different galaxies. Think of the moon as the linchpin of three belts that are going in a circle on a piston, and the moon's energy kept the Earth locked in place, and as that system in there broke, Earth was given its freedom, and its freedom to co-create in its own divine and to be set free into the three galaxies. And there are things behind the moon. I mean, you've described stuff that you see, and I mean, it goes on and on and on. Inside the moon itself, there are two massive crystalline objects that have been embedded there. And these are when ascended masters of other planets die, a lot of them have missions. And that mission is to make sure knowledge, wisdom, and education is spread to the other species. So when they pass on, they become a crystal. I mean, like an actual knowledge crystal. And there will form into big groups, or several dozen of them will pass on into a crystal. So they'll make a hive mind of knowledge and wisdom. And these are inside the moon. And these are our schools that many of us experience in dream time.
It's a standard question. How do you know you're talking to an ascended master? You don't. Unless they prove that they have the ability to remain in sacred neutral, vibrate at the frequency of the Akashic record, and they will immediately represent their hive organization, because one ascended master is all ascended masters. They're in unity outside of this dimension and time space, trying to get us all to work together, who are in a bunch of different polarities. So the ascended masters are trying to herd the feral cats, and we're the feral cats. So if this feral cat goes, I'm not a feral cat no more, hey, Mr. Ascended Master, that's not just you, Saint Germain. Every Ascended Master that's ever been on this planet is a part of your hive of who you are. And your whole purpose is to figure out the way to get all the feral cats to agree that, you know, you can all share the ball of string. So yes, can I talk to Ascended Masters? You're never talking to one. That's the first thing to go by. If you want to project that it's Saint Germain or project that, that's fine. But it's all of them. And the same thing with the angels. It's all of them at once. But we, as this frequency time thing, need something to anchor in this reality to give it what? Our belief. That's justice and judgment, isn't it? So if a being is true and neutral and it's a sovereign thing, how can you be in judgment of it? But that's the next layer of that question. How can we be in judgment of a being that chooses to be a false light being? No one is left behind. In unity, there is no justice and judgment. There is remedy and resolve, because time and money debt is not the factor. When we take those out of the basis, our ability to judge the foundation of all beings as whether being good or bad by a title calling them ascended master, yes, this dimension and time stream has really bastardized that word. The propaganda industry needed to do it. Otherwise, people would be mass awakening, walking away from the government, and there would be no New World Order. So naturally, they're going to go and corrupt all of those different things. And I'll let you on a little backstory. Last year, I met over 100 people who believed they were Saint Germain, and they were the only Saint Germain in the world, and every other one of them were crazy. 50 Mary Magdalens, another 100. I cannot even begin to tell you, every year, somebody thinks they're Jesus. Somebody thinks they're Saint Germain. Somebody thinks they're Jeshua. No, you're not. You're not. The Ascended Masters cannot be in this world. They were kicked out. They cannot incarnate here. They are ephemeral. And only their teachings survive. And it is the teachings that are misunderstood and misguided and put into the hands of zealots. There are Ascended Masters out there that are going, mother, they're impersonating me. I never said that. But we in this dimension and time stream who are in justice and judgment make labels. But sometimes those labels are for positive, sometimes they're for negative. Guess what? We can't change people's views. If I want to spout Ascended Master 90 times on a show, I can. But I don't. Why? The Ascended Master's days are over in this dimension. They're waiting for us to finish so they can go on to the next experience and not have to deal with all of our traumatic bullshit. Because we are the next ascended masters, so that the next seven generations actually have space to live, love, learn, and prosper. Without war, without hatred.
Ascended masters of other planets die. A lot of them have missions, and that missions is to make sure knowledge, wisdom, and education is spread to the other species. So when they pass on, they become a crystal. I mean, like an actual knowledge crystal, and there will form into big groups, or several dozen will pass on into a crystal. So they'll make a hive mind of knowledge and wisdom. These are inside the moon. And these are our schools that many of us experience in dream time. And there are two separate ones that teach us the co-creating value of the dream time and the co-creating value of experiencing and exploring the third and fourth dimensional parts of our galaxy.
You got all!
but maybe this just isn't what I'm looking for. That could have happened. On the other hand, if it had really been something that I had heard the music and thought, man, you know, this just isn't where I'm at. You know, I would have given him everything that I could have given him, but it wouldn't necessarily have been something that I would have gone away and said, well, gee, you know, that was cool, that was session, but I don't know if this is a relationship that's really going to be worth my while, you know, going after. Fortunately, for everybody concerned, he seemed to be thrilled with what I did for him that day, and I had an awful lot of fun, and I genuinely liked those songs.
Okay.
You know, now High Fashion and Mutiny were much more traditional R&B funk songs, so they were kind of more in my wheelhouse.
Okay.
Susanna's Pajamas was kind of like a fusion-y kind of little jazzy track, so it enabled me to just kind of do my thing. Desire was an interesting song because rhythmically it's almost like a country and western song. It's like a Texas two beat. It's a really odd song. But it had something to it that really just kind of captured my imagination. I said, this, you know, that's an odd song, but I really dug it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very different. So I came away from that afternoon, you know, I mean, you know, it was about 2.5 hours, you know, we were done. So I came away with that just basically saying that was fun. That was really cool. It was really interesting working with him. But it wasn't like I came away thinking like, oh my God, this is like, you know, this is God's gift to music.
Okay.
Because first of all, the totality of what Prince is as a musician, I'm not going to be able to get everything that he's about from just one recording session. You know, it would almost be insulting if I came away and said, oh my God, now I get it. No. There's so much more that he, you know, it was like he has so much to give as a musician that you're only going to really get an opportunity to understand everything that he can be about over a period of time.
Darling, darling, with unity, no one but no one could make us fall. Darling, now there's mutiny. Maybe you should have called.
I did that session, and my plan was I was just going to hang around for a few weeks in Minneapolis, spend time with Alan and my family. And I was going to go back home to Atlanta because it was already understood that whatever was going to come of this project, this family album, it wasn't going to happen for a while. Purple Rain, the movie, was scheduled to be premiered in a month, and then soon after that, he was going to be going on tour with his band. So it was likely that this family album may not even see the light of day for another year. And I'm thinking, well, you know, this is rock and roll. A lot can happen in a year. He could lose interest in this whole thing, and that could be the end of it.
Like some unwanted child.
Baby!
It's all over now. I loved you all the while.
She still stayed the same place? Yeah!
Mama on my way. I'm coming. Yeah, coming. Hot chili mama. I'm coming, baby. Coming. Hot chili mama. I open the door. Down the stairs. I ran to my car. Walked up the stairs. Knocked on hot chili mama door. Nobody answer at the door. Knock harder on the door. Nobody answer at the door. Knock harder on the door. And then she opened the door. And she was inside there with a mule. And I said to her, hot skillet mama, I love you. Hot skillet mama, I love you. Hot skillet mama, I need you. Hot skillet mama, please. Hot skillet mama. Hot skillet mama, got to have you. Come on, baby, come on, hot skillet mama. Come on, hey, come on, hot skillet mama. There she was, standing there. My hot skillet mama. Her lips was like a hippopotam lips. Her nose was like an elephant's snout. Her hair was can't you, don't you, and you bet not try to comb it. Her jaws hung down by her knees. But most of all, she was built like an old bass fiddle. And I said to her, hot skinned mama, I love it. Hot skinned mama, I need it. Hot skinned mama, please. Hot skinned mama, I want you. Hot skillet mama, gotta have it. Hot skillet mama, baby. Hot skillet mama. 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 Hot. Hot. Skillet mama.
That was Yuk Nan, the one from the sun, playing with the Sun Ra Orchestra. I'm thinking around 1965, 66, you know what I mean? And we're going to get back to Eric Leeds. That's Eric Leeds. Now, look, now, my goodness, if people don't know who Eric Leeds is, well, it's not my place to tell them, because if Eric Leeds has not found you, all right, I'll tell you. Eric Leeds was Prince's saxophone player's signature to his sound from, I guess, in the late 80s. But Eric Leeds played with Prince right up into the 2000s. And really, all the sign of the times, love sexy stuff. There's a lot of Eric Leeds around happening. And now the Prince fans, Eric Leeds is like one of the apostles. He is. He's one of the original. Hey, man, let's not bust. Let's not blaspheme in here. But, all right, I'm going to dust off my rusty old halo, and we're going to get back to that. Because there's more Eric Leeds going to say. And there's more that you're going to say that you should probably hear. But before we get to that, on this show, dust off that rusty old halo. Oh yeah!
Rusty old halo.
Hey, toss it out!
Skinny white cloud. Some sucker hang wings full of patches. Rusty old halo. Hope that's the world is scratching. as a king. Yet he won't give his neighbors a thing. His day will come. I'll make a bet. He'll get to heaven. And here's what he'll get: a rusty old halo. Skinny bright cloud. Some secondhand wings full of patches. Right in the corner of wherever you are, doing each day the best you can do, then you'll be sure they'll never hand you a rusty old halo. Skinny white cloud, some secondhand wings full of patches, rusty old halo, robe that's only scratchy.
To me, I played the cards that were in my deck. Now it's game over, and it would seem my life's a wreck.
That's right, that's right.
Laugh it up, laugh it up. Every day I walk the streets with my head down low. I'm feeling so bad, and I'm waiting for some to bring me that final blow. Come on, get it, on, get it. Say the word and say the word. Ain't nothing left for me down here.
On the airplane.
Nothing left for me now. World filled with pain.
I'm not going to, like, sit here and get my hopes up as to whatever this is going to happen. I'm just going to take this a step at a time. So I was still hanging in Minneapolis, and about a week later, Prince apparently asked Alan, he said, is Eric still in town? And he said, yeah.
I wasn't looking at all my other choices. I should have seen what you were like, baby girl. An unholy mess that I tried to make into the high priestess. What you were to me, baby. You shattered my image of you. But it's something I constructed my damn self anyway.
I know that.
guess it's better this way. I learned something, right?
Besides, I'm never truly alone, am I?
That's what I tell myself.
Attended to by heavenly hosts.
Dust off your head, old friend.
Attended to, and the truth is my host.
I'm the host of this show. Count them all. I bite the inside of my cheek because of my wisdom tooth. And I kept that shit because I'm so prone to tell the truth. Just like Eric Leeds when he talk about prompts.
Back in the day.
And the music you're hearing by me, original soul music, you know, is all, well, I don't want to say it's all because of a lot of things, but a lot of inspiration was derived from Eric Leeds and Prince back in the days.
He says, well, I've got another song for him to come in and play on. So I came back to the studio that day. This was about a week, week and a half after the first session. And he had Nothing Compares to You.
Mm. Oh, that one?
Yeah. And
but the old version.
So that.
Not the Sinead O'Connor version, guys.
Solo on that.
Relax.
And then there was another song we did a few days after that that didn't end up on the album. It was just a straight-up, really hardcore funk jam that was called Feline. Mm. And that's been out there in bootlegs, and it didn't end up on the album. It was just an outtake. It just didn't make the final cut for the album. But it's been, you know, I'm sure all of the diehard Prince fans have a version of that somewhere. And then after that, he had his band in town because they were rehearsing for a short set that they were going to play at the premiere party in L.A. On the night that Purple Rain was premiered in L.A. There was an after party for that, and him and the band were going to do like a short 20-minute performance of a few songs. So he had the band with him at that time, and they were rehearsing that stuff. So one afternoon, I was just hanging around. I think it was the day before that I was going to go back home to Atlanta. And he asked me to just come in and jam with the band. So that was the first time that I actually played with him.
Long gone night within you. You're saving your love for some soldier. We'd much rather die than stay by your side. If you only knew the size of the colors of faces. What happened in curious places. Your body and covers my tower. Long
cassette. By the way, that is a cassette tape. That's right, you heard me right. And the Prince bootlegs that Eric Leeds is talking about, I get for real. And you know what? The tape didn't stop. The damn thing done got it. That tape started to get it. Remember that? Well, some folks do. We gotta demagnetize the heads, I guess. Come on back, Prunes. Oh, yeah. Don't get all tangled up in those heads and rollers. You can make it. You can make it. Yay, buddy! I got so excited, I turned it off. The tape got eaten again! That's not funny! Oh, man! What can you say about that, Eric?
When he was actually playing with him and his band, we jammed for like maybe an hour one afternoon. And the next day, I flew home to Atlanta, and basically it was just like, okay, well, I'll see what happens next. You know, there were no promises. I kept paid for the sessions, and it was like, okay, cool. And it was like, whatever happens next is going to happen. And if it happens, then I'll take it as it comes. But there was no, guarantee of any continued involvement other than that. I think later that year, in I think around October, he and the band were in production rehearsals because they were just ready. They were going to hit the road with the Purple Rain tour in a few weeks. And I came up for about a week or so in October, and we ended up doing one more song. It was the other instrumental on the Family album, the one that was called Yes. And we did that. And then I went back home to Atlanta and, waited to see what happens next. So,
just curious, back to Yes, did you guys cut that live, or did he already have that done when you came and worked on it?
He had the track. He had the track done for that. In fact, that was the first occasion. Well, no, actually, Feline, he did. He basically had the track, and he just left the track with me, and he left, and he said, "Do whatever you want with it. It's yours. Just whatever." So everything that was on, all the horns, all the melody line, the arrangement was mine on that. Now the song was actually highly edited because the original track was almost seven minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
The version as it appeared on the album was edited down to I think like maybe 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes, or something like that. So.
Wow, that was that's a cool track.
Yeah. I mean, it was a cool track. He had all the gizmos going on the guitars and keyboards right. on that. You know.
Yes, sir. All right. Wow. So you say you the band the Revolution was gearing up for the tour. Now I'm on the outsider, so I'm gonna give you my side and you can jump in with the details. I just remember looking at Purple Rain Purple Rain Tour Live Syracuse home video concert, and certain point you come in playing, I believe, and Eddie M was up there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. What he would do, you know, Sheila and her band, which Eddie M was a member of Sheila's band, you know, they were the opening act on the Purple Rain Tour. And I was still living in Atlanta. I believe that tour started in Detroit, and their next stop was Greensboro, North Carolina. They were in Greensboro for several nights. And I was going to be driving from Atlanta down to Florida, where my parents lived. It was right before Thanksgiving.
Sexy, she acts with tears. Last climax was so toxic. She says, "It's nothing yet. We like it.
1984. And so I detoured and stopped in Greensboro just to check out the show, because I had never seen Prince perform live. And Alan said, "Yeah, come out and check out the show." So I did. And Prince, once Prince knew I was there, he asked me, he said, "Come on up and sit in with us." And I said, "Well, on what? I mean, you know, and I don't know any of this music." And he said, "No, I said, it's just on the encore, we do Baby, I'm a Star." And the routine was is that he would routinely bring members of Sheila's band, including Eddie M, and Sheila would come out on Baby, I'm a Star. And, you know, Sheila would be playing timbales or whatever. So once they, you know, kind of got through the song, then Prince would vamp on the song for maybe 5-10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So he asked me to come up and just play and just solo on the out vamp of Baby, I'm a Star. So I did that a couple nights, and then I went home. And then a few months later, I came out to L.A., and he then asked me to stay out on the tour for the remaining the couple months that were left on the rest of the tour. And then he started bringing me up on more songs. On Baby, I'm a Star, he brought me up on a couple things in the middle. And so by the time they did that, the concert in Syracuse, by then I had been out on the tour for a while, just coming up and you know, playing a solo on a couple songs during the show by then.
Wow. That was a monumental tour, man. I mean, like I got a chance to see that myself, and you know, that went all over the place in the United States.
Yeah,
you gotta shut it down. And again, this is I gotta give you the outsider's point. So other than seeing things on MTV, you know, there was no internet, so a lot of the stuff that's going on, I have no clue what's going on behind the scenes. So one of the first things I remember, you know, Around the World in a Day comes out, Raspberry Beret video, and then I think the next sort of thing that I remember seeing was the MTV interview live out there from Paris. You guys were recording the movie.
Yeah, it was actually in Nice.
And that America performance, for a lot of us, was the first glimpse that, yo, this band has grown, and there's sort of a changing, the sound is sort of kind of going in a different direction. And it was some badass shit, man. It was like, I think your partner, Mr. Bliss, was...
On that video, it was me and Eddie.
Yeah.
Okay,
Eddie. Okay, got it. Mm-hmm. But that was such a dramatic change in the style to me a little bit. It was like, I was like, whoa, the horns is really going in, and the rhythm guitar. I think, I don't know if Miko was in the band playing with that.
No, he wasn't there yet. Okay. No,
But talk to me a little bit about how is the band transitioning at this point? Was it different?
Well, what happened, you know, we came off the road at you know, this was now spring of 85, the Purple Rain, you know, we finished the Purple Rain tour. And basically my next thing was that we were going to go into rehearsals that summer, because the Family album was finished and was actually finally going to be released. So the Family album came out in summer of 85, and we had a top 10 hit with the song Screams of Passion. So the plan is that the Family, you know, the group, the Family, as far as what the group was Paul Peterson, Susanna Melvoin, myself, Jelly Bean Johnson, and Jerome Benton. Now, we had to put together a band. You know, we had to find bass player, guitar players, keyboard players, and that's what Miko came into the Family. He was going to be the guitar player in the Family. Susanna and Wendy's brother, Jonathan, who, of course, tragically passed away in the mid-90s, he was one of the keyboard players in the band with the Family. So we were rehearsing that summer for... Ostensibly, the plan was that there was going to be a tour in 5 with the Family and the group Maserati, which was that group that Mark Brown had produced.
Thank you.
Mark Brown had produced, and they had that one album. And the family, we did one gig at First Avenue, the First Avenue Club here. And then shortly after that, Paul decided to leave the group and pursue other things. So the family project fell apart at that time. Now, in the meantime, I had already started doing some recording with Prince for his own music.
You must believe visitors out of space. And you must understand
special mission,
which is to exhibit your unique human traits. Realize that there are others.
There's others, man.
On a string is it keeping you down? And understand there's more out there.
Oh, you know it.
The countless worlds
in their majesty.
Really must believe. All right. Never comes a time when I'm
Something bad to my fellow man. They want me to do.
I will not raise hand against him. Cause I'm the ways of old.
You know, I'm through.
Cause
I resign. Not like Eric Leeds. He feeling fine. He don't play no junk. He play that new funk. Eric Leeds.
So the question was, if I'm now doing recording for his own music, at what point in time was he going to maybe then ask me to become a member of his band?
You gotta be Eric. You know you got to be. In and out, all the way through it. Doing it to it. Eric Leeds.
Nothing had been really stated about that because basically the family was still an entity at that point. But after Paul quit the band, and was around that time that he was in Nice because he was filming the movie Under the Cherry Moon.
I ran our base.
A hand against them.
Cause the ways of old.
You know, I'm through. I resign. The old paradigm.
You want to be free? Stop living like tomorrow's the 22nd century. It's an abomination in this devil nation. And Exuma, he done prophesied about that. He knew lots of people have their hands on the rail, by the way. I mean, Prince Rogers Nelson, obviously, myself, as best as I can. This music done by me, the host of the show, and I say that. But look, man, what you gonna be a slave to? Your own anxiety, your own fears, or that little device that's slowly causing you cancer? With which, you gotta keep up with all your peers? Well, guess what? You keep that near your brain or your genitals. Either they ain't gonna be no you, or they ain't gonna be no future use, no generation wise. Cause you're frying your Johnson. Don't keep your cell phones in your pockets, folks. To the fellas. You know. You want to get free? You think this is progress, by the way? Well, look. Tomorrow, we'll be the 22nd century.
There is no oxygen in the air. Men and women that lost their hair. Ashen faces, legs that stand. Ghosts and goblins walk in this life. When the day becomes yesterday and tomorrow becomes eternity, when the soul goes way beyond, when life is taken and there are no babies born, tomorrow will be the 22nd century. Tomorrow will be the 22nd century. It will be. And gone, and the 20th century was the dawn. The beginning of the end was the 21st, when the 20th century was at an end. 1990 was the year when the plague struck the earth. 1988 was the year when men struck out for freedom, and bloodletting was the thing that was. People said there was no cause, there was no reason, and there was no cause. 1972 was right all the way, drums and bugles blasting all through the day. Right wing, left wing, middle of the road, sidewinder, backswinger, backlash, whiplash. Red stocking, liberation of women, liberation of man. Everybody carrying a heavy load. Tomorrow will be the 22nd century. Tomorrow will be the 22nd century. Tomorrow will be the 22nd century. It will be. Of animals, prevention of cruelty to animals, man and beast. Flying and non-flying things, revolution of music, poetry, love and life. Sex changing, and even your brain is not hard. It's a plastic thing that can be caught. There are no more diseases that can be caught.